Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 811, June the 22nd, 1987. This week begins the second phase of the Iran-Contra hearings. I call this Reagan's Revenge. People on the West Coast have to be up at 6 o'clock and be very sharp and alert and listen for all of the material that isn't going to be asked before the Senate-Iran investigation. They're leaving out so much material, not because of time, but they're driving it along a certain course to protect particular agencies and people, but always going towards Ronald Reagan, and I'll do more about that in a little bit. I hope you all listen and tape as much as you can, and if not, I'll try to update as much as I can in just having 1 hour a week to share it with you. There are two new books out about political assassinations and the cover-ups of these important assassinations in America. One is a new book by James Earl Ray, the alleged assassin of Reverend Martin Luther King. It's called Tennessee Waltz, and the address for ordering this book, a first edition copy, is St. Andrews Press, St. Andrews, Tennessee, 37372. The book is 1995. The other book is on the House Select Committee on Assassinations, the cover-up of G. Robert Blakey and the staff. And this is very timely because you'll see the parallels between that and the Iran-Contra affair. The person who wrote this book and had it published is Ted Gandolfo, G-A-N-D-O-L-F-O. And that book is $22.95. Write to him at 1214 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. And if you didn't write that fast enough, send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll tell you how to order these two books. Last week, I mentioned the sentencing of Franklin Camper, the man who runs the terrorist school for mercenaries in Ewetown, Alabama. The New York Times had an article about him that I didn't have before the broadcast last week, but it was a quotation of Mr. Camper, because when he wanted mercy from the judge, he said he was a secret agent of the United States government and that his mercenary school had been used for covert government missions to such places as Nicaragua. Well, the judge didn't believe him and gave him 14 years in the clink, but the point is that he pleads, I'm a government agent, and I work overseas in places like Nicaragua, but his sentencing was firebombing two homes of nursery school teachers in California. The long-held secret, the deepest secret of our American government, the last thing really to share among all the researchers is the idea that we do have assassination teams in this country. Those that do it and those that cover it up know it. It's just the native population that stays ignorant. Now, there's an important lawsuit opening up that may affect the Mercenary magazine of Robert Brown, Robert K. Brown, of Soldier of Fortune. This came out in the San Francisco Examiner yesterday, a long article, Assassins for Rent, Magazine's Classified Ads Do a Brisk Business in Murder. Now, there's a murder trial is going to take place because a gentleman opened his door and was attacked, a student by the name of Norman Norwood, and he had no reason not to open the door, to be afraid of anything. And a man, Richard Savage, had contracted to kill Norwood through a classified ad in Soldier of Fortune because this person had a beef against Norwood. He was going to marry a Mr. Gray's, Larry Gray's former wife. So that through this magazine, they got an assassination team. Again, working in the United States, Norwood filed suit against Soldier of Fortune last spring. He wants $2 million punitive damage, and Soldier of Fortune said they couldn't get a dismissal. The case starts in Fayetteville this week. I don't know how much coverage there'll be coast to coast because, you see, Robert K. Brown was put into business by General John Singlaub, who's made to look like a hero before the Senate House committees. And Singlaub went with Robert Owen up to Colorado to Robert K. Brown's place. Owen worked and Singlaub with the Keeney Meanies, the British death squads, with the mercenaries all over the world, not just with the Contras, but were particularly interested in the Iran-Contra story, so that Robert Brown is in the hot seat, as was Franklin Camper, and again, for domestic operations, not for overseas. Kevin Coogan, who's a writer and researcher and just did an article on terrorism in Europe for Mother Jones, has done extensive work on Soldier of Fortune and the Nazi connections. He did a long report on that, and just citing some examples, he said there's thousands of anti-Semitic neo-Nazi publications produced by extremists in the United States and Canada, such as Ernest Zundel, running the Samizdat publications, and along with Zundel, there are American publications such as Robert Brown and Liberty Lobby that publishes ads, spotlight, advertising the issues of Soldier of Fortune. They advertise Zundel's publications, and also that's the company that Mark Lane works for, Liberty Lobby, and they continue to publish articles about Zundel and praising him. Kevin also cited an ad in Soldier of Fortune in 1979, January, talking about the Allied Germans, the Americans and the Germans, getting together, reunion of the Battle of the Bulge people and high-ranking officers of both the American Army and the German Army, and it gave the addresses of their reunion. Of course, the Battle of the Bulge is the area, I believe, where the top Nazis did meet with the top American officials and merged our two governments at that point in time, merged them in Bern, Switzerland, but the actual agents got to meet each other through the Battle of the Bulge, and the innocent people who were not part of this were shot on sight, and those that were doing the shooting or ordered the shooting were released from Dachau prison by Senator Joe McCarthy. Soldier of Fortune ran articles about U-boat commander Hans Huben. Huben today is a multimillionaire, the head of a marine contracting firm, World Marine System, and is a United States citizen. He came here in 1955. They ran an ad for Devil's Guard by George Robert Elliott, a biography of Hans Josef Wagemuller, Wagemuller, an ex-Waffen-SS partisan hunter whose entire battalion was shipped by the French to fight over in Vietnam, part of Nazi Germany. They ran ads for Turner's Diary by Andrew MacDonald, a nuclear physicist out of the National Alliance Bookstore in Washington, D.C., and the Turner Diaries details the way to kill every black and hang them, and Jew in America, cut their throats and hang them post to post throughout the country. They ran ads for Duplicate. Soldier of Fortune sold its marketing list, according to Kevin, to the National Vanguard, which is a Nazi group that's part of the Aryan Nations, February 82, and at the time, Soldier of Fortune had 220,000 readers. Their letters to the editor complain about their ads for Nazis. They sell World War II hats, badges, and all kinds of Nazi paraphernalia, and ads for captured Japanese gear. And Paladin Press translates SS Werewolf Combat Instruction Manual. That was translated by Michael Fagnan, and Soldier of Fortune was advertising that in 1982. They also have sections on Aaron Banks and the Nazi hero of the SOA, and research has been done about the top Nazis, not dead Nazis, but current ones who are active and who are linked to Soldier of Fortune. So this particular Robert K. Brown, hopefully he would follow the same path as Franklin Camper, and maybe if this lawsuit is successful, other people who've been involved with terrorism that resulted by ads in Soldier of Fortune will go into this and make sure that he stays in for a long while. Last week I cited the gifts of Ronald Reagan and Nancy. I wanted to give the source of that. The LA Times, May 21st, 1985, just a month ago, gave the list of gifts that they had received. The figure was $12,896 worth of gifts. I thought it was around $17,000. It was $12,000. And again, this is the list of gifts for 1986. And there is nothing at all about the home, the $2 million home that was purchased for the Reagans. Interestingly enough, the Reagans' gifts to one another have included a chainsaw and a manure spreader. Well, I'm sure the Reagans will use a lot of manure spreader when they retire, if they live long enough to retire, and I'm sure he'll never go to jail. But he'll hardly call it a retirement when he leaves Washington, and then all these stories really begin to gush and flow, and the Teflon truly begins to peel off. Now, I did two broadcasts just briefly on Thomas Polgar of the Central Intelligence Agency. One was this last March, titled, Is There a Mole Loose in the Iran-Contra Probe? That was from Guardian, March the 4th, 1987, telling about Thomas Polgart, station chief in Saigon, who replaced Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins, who's now working for the Senate House Committee to screen out CIA involvement in the Iran-Contra affair. And then I also mentioned Thomas Polgar again, May the 11th, 1987, just a few weeks ago, program number 805. But in addition to the two broadcasts I did, and those were very brief, I want to just spend quite a long time, not that there isn't so much other news, but this is very essential to this committee, going into another article about Thomas Polgar by Vince Bielski and Dennis Bernstein. This was published in these Times, June the 10th, 1987. And the things that they say pertain to past investigations, such as the first investigation of the murder of John Kennedy, the second investigation, the Senate Watergate investigation, the Korea Gate. The reason we have these traumas is that instead of admitting that terrible mistakes were made and crimes were made, the power structure in Washington protects itself, and then these problems accumulate. And this article personifies what they have in mind, the Iran-Contra Committee, the chief counsels, and the staff, by allowing Thomas Polgar to be the man to screen out the CIA and protect the CIA while the hearings take place. The article is about conflict of interest, having Polgar, the CIA station chief from Saigon, screening and protecting persons that he worked with in Iran, not in Iran, but in Chile and Southeast Asia. This is from In These Times. The article says Thomas Polgar was feeding disinformation to Congress during the Vietnam War. He already had a reputation of that, and Bella Abzug, Representative Abzug from New York, was so angry at his lies, she asked when she saw him at the U.S. Embassy, which one is Thomas Polgar? Now, please note that Thomas Polgar, 10 years later, or a few years, maybe 12, has been promoted to be in charge of the investigation of this committee, to have a big handle on it, and Bella Abzug is no longer in Congress. I'm sure they saw to it that she was defeated in New York when she challenged Polgar for the lies that he did in Southeast Asia. This article explains that Thomas Polgar was formerly the object of congressional scorn, but the country has now moved so far to the right that he's a member of the Congressional Commission, one of the chief investigators, and his son, as I mentioned on the broadcast earlier, is an aide to Representative Rudman. Now, the Graham Rudman bill, you know, is to give the military all it wants, but to balance the budget by taking away from the domestic. That's the father of the co-partner with Senator Graham, their senator, not representative, Rudman. And so the son of Polgar is working in the offices of this person while the president is deciding what to do to balance the budget or get the debt off, and the only thing he can think of are the domestic programs. This article continues. Representative Pike and Senator Frank Church exposed the CIA earlier in 1975 in their role in assassination plots and dirty deeds. Note again, and I'll keep interrupting this article to interrupt and explain certain things that many people are not aware of, but Senator Frank Church is no longer alive, and Representative Pike is not on the scene, and also Senator Hart, called the conscience of the Senate, also had cancer like Frank Church. So while they were active exposing assassination plots and dirty deals, the assassination plotters stay alive, the Shackley, Kleins, Wilson, Turple, Van Marbord and Polgar's, and they're ill. They're all alive, but the investigators are either removed from office, or they buy votes, or they die of cancer. The article continues, Thomas Polgar met with Donald Gregg, former CIA colleague and advisor to Vice President George Bush, when he arrived in Washington. Now notice again, and I want to keep interrupting this article to call attention to the fact that the only person talking about George Bush's involvement in the Iran-Contra affair happens to be Jack Anderson. But Polgar is protecting Bush. His close advisor, former CIA friend Donald Gregg, is the connection to Mr. Felix Rodriguez in El Salvador and to the using the Honduras bases for the fighting the Contra war, helping the Contras fight in Nicaragua. Donald Gregg is a direct conflict of interest in terms of the committee because he's an associate of Polgar's, and they work together, directly together, and Gregg is involved with those people that have armed the Contras and involved with the airplane that Mr. Hassenfoss went down on, and Thomas Polgar worked with this Donald Gregg and laid out his agenda to the CIA and told him that he would literally assure them that the Iran-Contra hearings would not be a repeat of the Pike Church investigation. Now, that is the most outlandish conflict of interest because you saw Mr. Gomez Rodriguez on the stand, and although he went directly to the vice president, there's no pickup by the committee, and this is a working arrangement when this man is hired to literally assure that he will protect Gregg and Bush if he can, and that's what's happening. So translated, it means I met with them, they hired and interviewed me, and don't worry, we'll take care of matters that involve the CIA. Now, if they're able to do all that, does that mean that they could get rid of William Casey? He had his seizure in the CIA building the very day before he was to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee. These people ran the Phoenix program in Southeast Asia, the death squads in Laos and Cambodia, and the death teams that set up the secret police, the DINA in Chile. Does that mean that they don't have the chemicals or weapons to get rid of William Casey and then put all CIA involvement on Casey and not spread it out, such as Senator Frank Church and Representative Pike did with the Operation Chaos, the MKUltra, the COINTEL programs, and all the things that were happening domestically in the United States, and also Operation Chaos. The article continues, Senator Warren Rudman, vice chairman of the Senate panel, he handpicked Polgar for the job so that he could have what he said was an intelligence expert guide them through a complex probe of a covert operation. Now, that doesn't mean if he needs an intelligence expert, Senator Warren Rudman, he's taking the father of the man who's his aide. Why not take an intelligence expert who never lied to Congress, who wasn't accused of covering up the Vietnam atrocities, the corruption in Southeast Asia, who worked with the CIA? There must be some intelligence expert that didn't work with Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins, who didn't take over Shackley's job in Saigon, where you had the murders and atrocities and the scandals. It's like the excuse of using Albert Hakim for the visits to Iran is that he's the only person who spoke Farsi and he had to wear a wig in disguise so he wouldn't be recognized as only one person in the United States that speaks Farsi. I just read last week that there were approximately 40,000 Iranians who had been given passports into this country in just a short time period, and I'm sure all of them speak Farsi, but they had to use Albert Hakim. So the excuse that Senator Rudman has that he needs a guide, he doesn't need a guide who worked with these people. As a matter of fact, when Edwin Wilson was on television this past week from the federal prison interviewed by Larry King, he said, why don't you find out who hired these people? And why are they only going from a time period of 1985 to 86? He called attention to the fact that the committee is a cover-up because it's set its perimeters to 1985 or 86, and in that way Polgar can protect the whole backlog of persons who have been working the secret team since the end of World War II. This article continues, Thomas Polgar is also a paid consultant for a corporate risk analysis firm that had ties to the ex-Nicaraguan dictator Anastasia Somoza. He has a firm that he advises in Miami that is very closely related to the Nicaraguan, in quotes, freedom fighters, the people that left when Somoza was kicked out. I'll do more on that in a few moments. Then this article says, Polgar is an immigrant from Hungary. He came to the United States in the 30s, in the early 30s, and settled here, and that he's a Hungarian Jew who fled Eastern Europe and escaped Hitler's onslaught. Now, I'm so tired of hearing the excuse, like Otto von Bolschwing was put in a prison by Hitler for a year or whatever, or this one is a Jew who escaped. A very famous Hungarian, Ferenc Nagy, left Hungary and came to the United States, brought here by J. Edgar Hoover. And Ferenc Nagy worked with Permandex and Clay Shaw, and with the same Bay of Pig defendants that are in the Christic Institute suit. And early in the 30s, we had in this country Mr. Dr. Urban, the Gestapo agent who later recruited Errol Flynn, and in the 30s came Henry Kissinger and Peter Drucker. This hogwash always that they came here and that they're a Jew who escaped oppression, it's so sickening. If he fled Hitler, why is he working with Nazis and Reinhard Gehlen's outfit? Why does he work with the people out of International Imaging that became Stanford Technology, the Otto von Bolschwing outfit? Why was he operating the Phoenix program where they were killing up to 200,000 people in Vietnam and Laos? Why were they using tiger cages and napalm and torture? The excuse for bringing a Hungarian and calling him a Jew, we don't know if he's a Jew or what kind of a Jew he is, but this seems to be the excuse to do anything you want. You left oppression, therefore, and I think it's just time to bring it up. Every time they use this as a cover to bring up the point that the people writing these bios are pathological liars, making a history for the United States that has no basis in fact, based upon what these people do when they come here. This article says he served in Europe in the OSS, the predecessor of the CIA, and for 30 years he kept a prestigious job, chief of station in several countries. Well, when he worked in the OSS, he knows by now, by Operation Sunrise and books on the OSS, that our good Alan Dulles was working in Bern, Switzerland, with Karl Wolf of the SS and representatives of Heinrich Himmler of the SS, and Richard von Weizsäcker's father was a high official in Himmler's SS, the current president of Germany, who was at Harvard last week. This old story is getting so tiresome. The cover story is so tiresome. And then the article continues, because of his accent and his past, Polgar considered himself an outsider in the CIA. Do you think he really came over in the early 30s if he has such a thick Hungarian accent at this point? They said he overcame his personal insecurities with extra effort and faith because he would look at Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, and that proved that Thomas Polgar could triumph. Well, Kissinger was in charge of that Southeast Asian war, and over Kissinger was his friend Fritz Kramer with the monocle, another German who ran the Pentagon. They ran over Westmoreland. He was the Pentagon official over General Westmoreland. He knows that these top Germans came into this country and went into the aerospace industry, into the military, and the excuse that I'm an underdog like Henry Kissinger and therefore I can triumph like Kissinger is just another piece of hogwash. The article continues, from 1972 to 75, Polgar had deliberately distorted information and intelligence about Vietnam. Frank Snepp, who wrote a book on the intelligence community, said he covered up mass corruption. He edited a report into oblivion. And John Stockwell of the CIA said that under Polgar's command, we could look at him and say, is this man sane? Now, I want to interrupt that question to ask why John Stockwell, when he was here in Monterey, and I asked him the role of Henry Kissinger in Central America, he said it isn't important. I asked him the role of Fritz Kramer. He said it isn't important to this story. I've mentioned it before, and I'm going to mention it as many times as is pertinent to what I'm saying on the air. I don't mind repeating that. It's different than repeating a news story, because Fritz Kramer has been on the National Security Council the past 6 years, and I'm thinking about the death squads and the horrendous things happening in Central America. And Henry Kissinger was sent down to make what they called the Bipartisan Commission. His main opponent from Yale died an untimely death just last year, and also Oliver North traveled with Henry Kissinger on this bipartisan group with them, and Kissinger is the protege, his mentor. Fritz Kramer sits in the NSC and directs Ollie North. If Stockwell says we would look at him and say, is this man sane? You have to turn yourself around and ask John Stockwell, are you sane to say that Kissinger and Kramer don't have a role in the entire Iran-Contra affair? As a matter of fact, Kissinger was the big wig with the Rockefeller family in bringing the Shah to this country. They were, and that caused the hostages to be taken. Then Jimmy Carter couldn't be reelected. And Kissinger has had a big role in the ousting of Mossadegh and putting the Shah into power in Iran. The Iranian, Middle East, Saudi Arabian connections, those seeds were all planted with Henry Kissinger before he got into Southeast Asia and before he went into Central America. And the article says that Polgar was covering up corruption in Vietnam. Well, he was covering up corruption in the Iran-Contra affair. Now, the Democrats don't ask questions of Mr. Polgar about what is going on. Today in the San Francisco Chronicle, there's an article about the Contras Shanghaiing over 400 people. The word Shanghaiing going back to the old Chiang Kai-shek problem. And what the Contras have been doing is picking up people on a bus. They'll tell a man to stand up, leave all the family there, and then kidnap him and take him to the Contra side and break up families. And this article in just this morning tells about the terror of the Contras and that the president asked them not to be so nasty, and they continue doing it. Polgar is covering up La Pensa bombing. He's covering up the drug running. He's covering up the planned murder of the ambassador to Costa Rica, and he's getting away with it today, just exactly as he did in Vietnam, and that's why he was brought in to do what he's doing today. Now, Frank Snepp of the CIA said that he testified before Senator Daniel Inouye, Democrat of Hawaii, about Thomas Polgar after the Vietnam War and the defeat there. Now, more than 10 years later, Inouye is chairman of the Senate panel, and he personally approved of Polgar's appointment. And if ever there was an example of covering up of the chairman of any committee, Daniel Inouye, if you see him, is thoroughly disgusting and is very pleased to cover up and has a sneer about him as he proceeds to keep these hearings at the most fundamental childish level while he lets persons on his own, on the other side, not his side, but his side of thinking, the Republicans, give their long speeches on why it's necessary to break the law if the motives are okay. This article said, after Vietnam, Polgar became station chief in Mexico. I mentioned that before, and then went on for a top job in Langley headquarters. Another conflict of interest. Polgar joined the AFIO, that's the Association of Former Intelligence Officers. It was founded in 1975 by David Atlee Phillips. Phillips was CIA's Chilean task force during the overthrow of Salvador Allende. Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins were down there, and Polgar also was active in the Chilean DINA takeover of the government by Mr. Augusto Pinochet, with his terrible death camps, his torture camps, and the track record of the person they helped get into power. Doesn't speak well for a man who fled Nazism and oppression in Europe, and then puts in a man who's throwing the swastika around in Chile and marching the goose step in Brazil with his companions. At the 12th annual convention of these former intelligence officers, Reid Irvine lauded them. He was the guest speaker. Reid Irvine is the head of accuracy in media, and he was rebutting a section of Miami Vice that showed intelligence operatives in Central America's bloodthirsty killers. Now, Reid Irvine says he wants accuracy in media, and yet he's lauding the very group who worked with Roberto Dobasan with the 3As in Argentina, brought the Argentine torturers up to Central America to do these bloodthirsty killings, and have instigated 1 million deaths in Central America in the past 10 years. I think I gave that figure about a week ago, at Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Honduras. Reid Irvine of Accuracy in Media is a staunch defender of, in quotes, the former CIA operatives who left the agency officially, then went to work for the privatization of this government for these secret teams on the outside. Another conflict of interest with Mr. Polgar is that he was on the vice president's task force on combating terrorism. Now, if he worked with George Bush, he's not going to investigate George Bush. If he worked with the CIA in Southeast Asia and they were being exposed, and the people there were doing the same things with the Iran-Contra affair, he's not going to expose them. The entire committee was stacked with CIA operatives. They participate in covert Contra networks. And one of the advisors to this vice president's task force on combating terrorism, two of them, are John Poindexter and Oliver North. So Thomas Polgar is brought in to protect Mr. Donald Gregg, aiding the vice president, protect the former CIA director, George Bush, who's currently vice president. He's protecting John Poindexter, Oliver North, Theodore Shackley, Thomas Kleins. He had a working relationship with all of them. And he's brought in as a consultant in 1985 to work with the task force, and they were directly working the Contra operations. Part of that group was Robert Earle, and the other was Craig Coy, two of North's top aides, who are actually working with the Contras. So this is the most gross violation of trust to the American people to have this man watching the team before the investigators and screening out anybody that touches or rubs up to his secret team that he's worked with for over 30 years. We'll take a one-minute break. This is Mae Brussel, in case you picked up the program in the middle of the program. Next time, get there at the top of the hour, whatever the hour is. I'll continue in about 1 minute with Mr. Polgar, Thomas Polgar, and the conflict of interest with the Iran-Contra hearings. What you hear is okay, but what you don't hear is even more important.